Lesson today is based upon the second book of Samuel, chapter 13, 14, 15, and 16. How far I'll get through this, I do not know. Most of our lesson today is historical. We find in the 13th chapter, I ended up last week speaking to you about David, how that he was praying that the Lord would spare his child, and how that while he was praying, he had such a feeling that God could spare the child, he could heal the child, and he believed that God could change his mind even as he had done in other cases. And therefore, he continued to pray. He was laying on his face praying to God that God would spare this child that had been given to Bathsheba. But Nathan had said the child would die, and it did die. And when it had died, then the servants, they began to speak with each other, and David noticed that this child had died. And then the servants questioned him about why that he had continued to pray and abstained from eating anything, and after the child had died, then he got up and he washed himself and he sat down and ate. Well, he says, while the child lived, I says, who can tell whether the Lord will be gracious unto me and spare the child. But now that it is dead, there was no need for him anymore to fast and abstain. He believed that this child, God had taken it to heaven. He believed that he would never see that child anymore in this life, but when he died, he would see it again. He would be taken to be with it. What a blessing, my hearers, if God reveals these things unto us and gives us to believe these things of our children. David had a lively faith exercised concerning the life of this child and the destiny of it. And he said in this here verse, who can tell whether God will be gracious unto me? I wonder how many of my hearers have ever been exercised with these few words. They are very pleasant and good words. Who can tell? A poor sinner, so despondent, so cast down sometimes, can't believe that God has begun the good work in their soul. And when they come to a text like this, oh, they're encouraged. Who can tell whether God will be gracious unto me? Have you ever said that, my hearers? Maybe you're saying it inside. Who can tell? That's why you come up to Bible class. That's why you come up to the house of God. Who can tell? Maybe God will be gracious unto your soul. Oh, I do wish he would be gracious unto every one of your souls. He's so sovereign in giving grace. You and I can't merit these things, but he does call upon us to come under his word, under his truth, and we never know who can tell what God will do. One word sometimes from this King of Kings humbles a sinner in the dust. One word sometimes so encourages a sinner that he not only says, who can tell, but I believe God has been gracious unto me. That's a little step further. You ever been there, my hearers? What a blessing if you have had some signs, some tokens in your life that God has been gracious unto your immortal soul. Let me tell you, if he has, he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. You may fear it. You may feel like it. You may believe it sometimes that he's left you because of your sins and your backslidings. But he is a faithful God, or he remaineth faithful unto the end. And now we find David in this chapter being called upon by Joab to come up to the city of Rabbah to take it, ere that he would take it in and receive the honor. So he went up and he took this city in. And now we find that what Nathan had said unto David was going to take place. And Nathan had said that God was going to raise up an evil out of his own house, and that God was going to punish him for his sins of adultery and of murder. And now in the next chapter we read that Absalom, he had a fair sister by the name of Tamar. And this man, Absalom, he was born unto David in Hebron. He was born to a woman by the name of Maacah, who was David's wife. And she came from a family whose father was king over a certain place called Geshur in Syria. And now this man, Absalom, the son of David, he was a fine, good-looking young man. He had a beautiful countenance, and he was the delight of his father, and he was the pride of the court, and likewise he was idolized by all the people. He was such a good-looking young man. Everybody liked him. He was well-favored. And now he had a sister called Tamar, and this young woman must have been a beautiful woman too. And now there was another son of David by the name of Ammon, and this was his firstborn. And this son, Ammon, he was to be heir to the throne. He was next in line to be king. Wise and a shrewd man in evil. And when he seen this on this young man Ammon, he said unto him, "Why art thou, the king's son, so lean from day to day?" And he did not conceal the reason why. He told him that he was sick of love for Tamar, but he dared not touch her. I would like to put that question to you, my hearers. This young man was sick in love, a passionate love, a fleshly love, an evil love, I would say. But may I ask you, why are you so lean from day to day? Maybe you're a king's daughter. Maybe you're a king's son. Why are you going so lean? Aren't there reasons for this leanness? And when you look inside by yourself, do you not find plenty of reasons why that you're so lean, that you have so little communication with the Lord, so little do you experience under the truth? Oh, you find that you're so cold and so lifeless and so barren most of the time, nothing seems to affect you. It doesn't seem as if ever the good Lord had laid a hand upon you. And you know when God begins to strip a person of everything that he had, and everything that he thought he possessed he had, and he begins to come into such stage where he fears that it's lost, that it's undone, then he's very lean. He hasn't anything to say about himself or about what God has done for him. He's mostly silent, whether it be a woman or a man. Or then some people, they see these creatures who before were so talkative, they had so much to say about the Lord and about his love and about his favor, and they say, "Why are you so lean? How come you don't say anything? Why are you so silent? Why don't you speak?" They haven't anything to speak about. The only thing they possibly could speak about is their guilt, of their sins, of their departures from God. They're giving away to this and to that sin, and fearing that everything is wrong. And now some of you may begin to long and to desire that you may be given to believe in Jesus Christ. For you are brought away from all your feelings and dependent upon the Lord to reveal himself to your heart. And now you fear that if you do not find Jesus, why, it's a lost matter with you. Or you realize more and more your lost condition. And now Jesus becomes so necessary. And all, and when you are stripped and brought down to this position, then my hearers, you long to find Jesus as your Savior, as your Redeemer. And then maybe you may be able to say, "Oh, if I find him, then I will speak again. But if I don't find him, I think it's a lost matter." Therefore, there are so many that are lean. There are many reasons there are leanness today amongst the people of God. But this man, he was lean because he was lovesick. And now this Jonadab, he gave him instructions. He didn't give him good instructions, he gave him evil instructions. He was a wise man, but he gave him very evil counsel. He said to him, "Make believe that you're sick. Go down in your room and lay upon your bed and have the king bring in Tamar and have her feed you and nurse you. And then you will have her very close to you, and then you will be able to do what you're longing to do." This Ammon did. He made himself sick. He went into his room, called for the king, and asked the king if he wouldn't send Tamar to him to nurse him. And the king, not suspecting anything, he sent word to Tamar to come up to nurse this man Ammon. And now while she was there making cakes and pouring out the cakes before him, he commanded that everybody should go out of the room, and that she should bring the cakes to him and feed him right out of her own hand. And as she done that, he took hold of her. "Come," he says, "lie with me." But she resisted him, and she spoke unto him and told him that that would be the most foolish thing that he could do, and that he would be a fool in Israel. "And me," she says, "what shall become of me?" Now she says, "If you want me so bad, speak to the king. I'm sure he won't deny you. But do not this thing, do not this folly." But he, being stronger than her, he overpowered her, and he forced her. And after he had done this, the love that he had became hatred. It says in the Bible that he hated her more than he had loved her. And after this, he pushed her outside of the door. Instead of giving her time to compose herself and to straighten out herself, he had some men come and they pushed her out of the door, and he bolted the door after her. And in this manner, she was pushed out, and she went out into the street, and she began to cry and to weep of the sin that he had committed on her, she being a virgin, and she being done in this way so villainously by him. It was an awful matter. And now she ran to her brother Absalom's house, and when she came to his house, she told him what had taken place. And he said to her, "Sister, just be still. Has your brother been by you? Remember, it's just your brother. In other words, I'll take care of him. I'll see that he gets what he's supposed to get." And now when David heard of these things, the father, he did not do justice. He was king, and he should have executed justice immediately upon Ammon for doing such a terrible thing. Oh, how many poor young women have been brought into this position like this woman. How often it happens, even in times in which we live, as we spoke last week. Terrible things are taking place and have taken place throughout the ages that this world has stood. But this, what was taking place now, was what God had said would take place. For now God was raising up an evil in the midst of David's house. This was the first evil, the sin of adultery. David had been guilty of it himself. And now this man Absalom, and he kept this in his mind and in his heart. He wanted revenge. David, he did not execute justice as a king. He liked this man Ammon. It was his firstborn. He had always spoken well of him and always favored him. And therefore, he thought it hard to do something unto him. But he should have executed justice. And where he didn't, Absalom, he held it inside. He thought, "There's a time coming, I'll get you." And now we find that 2 years later, Absalom, he has sheep, and they're going to shear these sheep. And when they sheared sheep in those times, they always had a feast. They invited their neighbors and a lot of friends, and they came up and they held the feast. And now David, and he went to the king and asked the king if he didn't want to come up to this sheep shearing, so that he would be there and bring the king's sons with him. But David said he didn't want to be a burden to his son. Well, he says, "Let Ammon come and the rest of the sons of the kings." But he says, "Why Ammon?" It seems that David knew something about what Absalom harbored in his heart. Although he didn't let it out, he questioned him, "Why just Ammon?" And still he persisted, and David let the king's sons go and Ammon with them to this feast that was to be held by Absalom. And now Absalom, he had given his servants command that when Ammon was exhilarated with the wine and was drunk, they should smite him, they should kill him. "Be valiant," he says, "be not afraid, do as I command you." And now while they were having this feast, then Ammon was exhilarated with the wine. And the servants, they did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded them. In other words, Absalom had this man, Amnon, assassinated. He was killed in the midst of this feast. And now when this took place, somebody ran to David and told David that Absalom had killed all the king's sons. Now, this was not a true report, of course. And it made David tear his clothes and made him go down on his knees in sackcloth and ashes when he heard this, thinking that all the sons had been killed. But Jonadab, the man that had given this Ammon the counsel, he went to David and said, "No, king," he says, "it's only Ammon that has been killed, because Absalom had this in his heart and in his mind from the day that Ammon had forced his sister Tamar." And now we find that Absalom, he fled to the land of Geshur. He went to his grandfather, a king by the name of Talmai, over Geshur in Syria. He was afraid that his father would take him and would execute him, so therefore he fled to this king. He remained in this place 3 years. And now, when David heard of all these things that had taken place, he was very wroth. But he did not send anybody to Geshur to get Absalom and have him executed, because he had killed his brother Ammon. He loved this young man. It was his favorite. His heart was set upon him. He was his delight. And therefore, after a while, he was comforted because Ammon was dead. And Absalom, he longed to have him back again. He longed to see him again. All my hearers, here are the two sins that David committed: adultery and murder, taking place amongst his own children. Oh, what an awful grief this must have been to him. And another thing, you know, if you do something, it says in the Bible, if you steal, can you tell somebody else not to steal? And now David, he had committed adultery, and he had murdered somebody, and his mouth was shut. He couldn't say to his sons, "Why have you done that?" Although he was king and he should have executed justice, those sins shut his own mouth. And therefore he could say nothing to them. And now we find Absalom in this land, and David, he's longing for his son. And Joab, he perceives that the king's heart is out after Absalom, and he, like a wise man, gets a woman. And he puts words in the mouth of this woman and tells her to go into the king and speak to the king so that he would bring back Absalom, his son, to Jerusalem. And now this woman, she takes the words that Joab gave unto her, and she commences quite an oration to the king. And finally the king wises up and knows that Joab had sent her to him. And he consents, and he calls Joab, and he sends Joab to Geshur to bring Absalom back to his own house, not to the city of Jerusalem. He was not to see the king's face. He was only to abide in his own territory. Now, this must have made Absalom happy in a way that he could come back to his own land and come back to his own home. But it didn't satisfy this young man. For this young man, Absalom, he had in mind that he was going to be king. And now when he got back and he had to abide in his own home, he could not go up to see the king's face. 2 years he was there and he did not see the king's face. And now he sent for Joab. And he wanted Joab to go in to speak unto the king. But Joab, he didn't come. He sent word again to him, and he didn't come. So then he says to his servants, "Go and put his field on fire." So they went and they put his standing corn on fire, just like Samson had put fire to the corn of the Philistines. And then when his field was on fire and he seen who had done it, then he went to Absalom. And he says, "Why did your servants put my field on fire?" "Well," he says, "why didn't you come to me when I sent to you? I sent to you twice," he says, "and you didn't come." He says, "I want you to go up and tell the king that I want to see his face." for I could just as well have remained in Geshur. Why come here and can't see the king's face? He said this, bold and insolent-like. He thought that he had a right to see the king and to be privileged again as he was before, to be in the court and to mingle with the people that came to the court and to have everything as it was before he had killed his brother Ammon. And now David, when he heard that this Absalom wanted to see his face and was very desirous after him, he thought it was in love. He thought that Absalom longed just like he longed to see him. And therefore, he permitted Absalom to come back into the court and to see his face again. This Absalom found again favor in the sight of the king. And now, my hearers, it was 2 years that he was back in his own territory and did not see the king. How long has it been that you haven't seen the king, my hearers? I mean King Jesus. How many years do you have to go back? If you remember correctly, maybe you can't remember. Maybe you say, my mind is so far gone, I can't even remember when the last time it was that the Lord spoke to me and visited my soul, when I was given a little light, when I was given a look upon his countenance, when he beamed down upon me. Or do you long again to see the king? Are you like Absalom? Or do you say, why do I have to live like this? Why do I have to live so far away from him? Why do I have to be so cold and so lifeless and so barren and so prayerless? Oh, I do long that this king would again visit my soul and give me a token of his love and of his mercy again, that he would revive the work in my heart, that he would give me to live closer to him, and that I would enjoy again his presence as I did in the past. Oh, I hope there are some souls amongst me that are longing to see the face of this king. I myself personally am longing too. Oh, that he would again grant unto us that grace that we had in the beginning. Job, he longed for that too. Oh, he said, I wish I was as in the times past when God shined down upon his tent and when he walked as with his steps in the butter. And now my hearers, Absalom being restored again as he had been, we find him taking horses and chariots and 50 men to run before him. And now this young man, Absalom, he stood in the gate. When the people came in to the gate of the city, he would stop these people, and he would inquire what their troubles were and what manner they were of. And when he talked to them, why he tried to instill in their minds a prejudice against King David and against the regime. Because, he said, there was nobody deputed by the king to be judge over your matters. Oh, he says, I wished I was judge, and that the people would come to me, and then I could judge your matters, and they would be straightened out. And now this man, Absalom, when he sat in the gate of the city, when the people came in, and he would speak to them, he would caress them, and he would kiss them, and he would talk so nice and so friendly to them, and you know people go for that, my hearers. We don't like to have a person with a sour face before us. We do like somebody friendly. We do like a smile. And you know, Absalom, he used his wisdom a little bit, and he smiled, and he was so friendly to the people, and all the people favored him. Oh, they loved this man, Absalom, because he was such a nice young man and so congenial. And now this man, Absalom, he had all the hearts of the people of Israel that came up to Jerusalem. And now Absalom, he goes into the king. And he says to the king, I remember, he says, when I was in Geshur, he says, I made a vow unto the Lord, that if the Lord brought me back into the city of Jerusalem, then I would serve the Lord. He's let me go up to Hebron and pay my vow unto the Lord and worship the Lord there. You see, he had been born in Hebron. And in that particular city, Hebron, where David had been made king first, he had many friends. And he was planning to take the kingship away from King David. And now he said to his father, that he wanted to go up to worship the Lord in Hebron and pay the vow that he had made. I think David, he was delighted to hear this from Absalom. I'm sure if you have a boy or a girl and they come to you and they say that they've lived far away from you, they've done things that were wrong and inconsistent, that they come back and they say, "Father, Mother, oh, I made a vow one time, and if I ever was brought back and found peace in your sight, then I would serve the Lord." Wouldn't you be happy? Wouldn't you try to further that? Wouldn't you say, "Son, daughter, go ahead"? You'd try to help them out so that they would worship the Lord. I'm sure every godly parent is looking forward that one of their children, yea, if all their children might not serve the Lord. Oh, how glad parents are when they see their children separated and seeking God. I wish every one of our children were in this state, my hearers. And I think David, when he heard that his son wanted to go up to Hebron to worship the Lord, oh, he was filled with delight inside. Oh, he consented immediately that this young man should go up there, not knowing what was in the heart of this young man, not knowing what this hypocritical creature was trying to do. Oh, how many are like Absalom? How many, my hearers, have smiles, they have friendly countenances, and all they are just like Absalom, and they put forth a show of religion. Oh, they're going to serve the Lord, and all with the purpose and view of getting ahead in the world, of getting somewhere, even in the church. How many are like Absalom? They set themselves up. He set himself up to be king, and so others set themselves up to be ministers of the gospel just to have an easy life. Oh, just a form of religion. They're just a show of it, just like Absalom. Hypocritical. Oh, how many we do not have in the times in which we live. Sad to say, it even happens in our own church. Oh, how many with a smile, with a friendly token, are taken in. And oh, my hearers, what happens in a church? There's a split, and there we have it. All because somebody has taken their hearts in with their friendliness and with their smiles, but not with the words that God has given unto them in their very hearts. Absalom-like. That's what's happening, my hearers, today. And now, my hearers, Absalom, he went from Jerusalem with 200 men. And these men, they went with him in their simplicity. They knew not what he was going to do. They didn't know that he was going to set himself up to be king. Oh, no, they had no thoughts whatsoever thereof. These 200 men were probably prominent men, David's friends. He sent them with him to Hebron. And now in the meantime, we find Absalom sending out spies throughout the land of Israel. And he's talking and saying to these spies that they should get the people together. And that when they hear the sound of the trumpet and they shout, "Absalom reigneth in Hebron," then all the people should come to Hebron. And they should all shout, "Absalom is king." Now this was what Absalom had in his mind and in his heart to do. All the while he was so hypocritical and deceitful with his father. And we find that he went up to Hebron. And when he came near my hearers, he immediately began to sacrifice and make a sort of a pretense of worshiping God. And then he sent word unto David's friend, Ahithophel, a Gilonite from the city of Gilo. Now this man, Ahithophel, had been David's counselor. Ahithophel was grandfather over Bathsheba. Bathsheba was a daughter of Eliam. Eliam was a son of Ahithophel. You got it? And now this man, Ahithophel, when David committed this sin against Bathsheba and had Uriah slain, he sought revenge. Just like Absalom sought revenge for his sister, so this man, Ahithophel, from being a friend and a counselor to David, he became his enemy. Or he sought to kill him if he could. And therefore David put him away. He did not give David any more counsel from that day on, but David had committed those sins. And now when Absalom declared himself to be king, he sent for this man. Now this man Ahithophel was a very wise man. He was a counselor for David and also for Absalom. It says a little further on in one of the chapters that if anybody inquired of this man Ahithophel, it was like they were inquiring after the oracles of God. Such wise counsel that this man gave. If you read Psalm 55, my hearers, you will find David speaking about this man. He went up to the house of God with him. We had sweet counsel together, he says. And a little further on in the chapter, he says, his words, he says, were smoother than butter. But he says, they were like drawn swords. Then he says his words were like soft oil, but they were so sharp inside. This was David's friend, turned to be his enemy. This man, Ahithophel, is another type that we find in the world today. Oh, how many Ahithophels who can give counsel to others, and who, with a show of religion, just like him, he went to the house of God with David. He had sweet communion with him. Oh, he thought the world of this man. He thought surely he was a child of God. And what does it turn out to be? It was all in the head. It was all in the mind. It was not in the heart. For when David committed that sin, and then we find the anger and the enmity of this man rising up against David. And now when Absalom declared himself king, he was right ready to fall on the side of Absalom. For Absalom sent for him, and he came to him to Hebron. And now there were so many people that favored Absalom, even in Jerusalem. Oh, there were so many people that liked this young man. And now when he was declared king, why, they all thought that David had died. And therefore, he, Absalom, had become king. And now they're all in Hebron. And some of these men, the commentary says, of these 200 men that went up in their simplicity and didn't know anything about it, that some of these men came back and told David what had taken place in Hebron, how that Absalom had raised himself up to be king. And they explained to him how many people were on his side. And when he heard this, my hearers, David, he immediately, I believe, took recourse to God. Oh, what should he do? And I think God gave him to see that he should leave the city of Jerusalem. As a politician, as a judge, and as a king, he decided that he would go up from Jerusalem rather than see this city invaded by Absalom and his army, rather than see that many of these people be slain with the sword and the city be destroyed. He decided that he would depart from the city of Jerusalem. And he immediately made work of it. He immediately got his household together and told all his friends, and we find David leaving the city of Jerusalem, leaving the palace in which he dwelt, taking everything with him except 10 concubines, which he left in his house to take care of his house, considering that they were the weaker sex, considering what they were unto him, concubines. He thought that these men that were with Absalom would do them no harm. He thought wrong. For God had said by the mouth of Nathan that David had committed this sin in secret, but God would give that somebody would rise up out of his own house and would commit that sin openly on the roof of his house in before the sun. And this is what happened, my hearers, to these 10 concubines that he left in his own house to take care of the house. And now David departs. Oh, what this must have been for this God-fearing parent. Oh, that he had to leave the city and leave his palace, all because his son, his own son, which came forth from him, had risen up against him and was striving to take the throne. This Absalom, my hearers, is a type of each and every one of us. When God created you and I, and Adam our covenant head, God was our king. We loved him, we walked with him, we talked with him and Adam. But it did not please us to remain to have God as our king. We fell away in and through the temptation of the devil, and we do not want God to be our king anymore. The devil came with the temptation to Eve that they would be like God. And this found root in the heart of Eve. And this has found root in my heart and in your heart. We all have a nature which wants to tear God from the throne, which want to be king instead of God. This is what Absalom wanted to be. He wanted to be king instead of his father David. And you and I have the very same nature, my hearers. And what a blessing when God subdues that nature. And when we are given to pray that Jesus may become king over us and rule and guide us by his blessed spirit. My time is gone. Next week, the Lord willing, we will continue the lesson from this very point. That's all for today.